But I'd like to begin by mentioning that all of God's creatures on earth, man is the most unique. Why? Well, we are emotional beings. We can express love and joy and peace and understanding and empathy, enthusiasm, happiness, etc., etc. We can go on and on. We can also experience different levels of depression, which I heard you use the word there in the beginning. Everybody at some time experiences some form of depression in life. It can be mild, it can be moderate, it can be extreme, depending on the situation at that time. Unfortunately, people do not always understand what it is or how to deal with it, and most of all, how to overcome it. It is a growing, I've had people over the years who were suffering various stages of depression and would ask me to anoint them to take it away. And I will explain to them that it is a matter of learning and character building. And I certainly would pray for you. It is not a sickness in the sense of somebody has a disease or anything like that. But as we look into it, and you'll see more, it has to do with understanding things that we are doing that we have to change in our life and put in good in place of it. It is a matter of growth, and it takes time for individuals to grow out of it. You can't just anoint somebody with oil and it's all gone. Well, wait a minute. The causes that you were involved in are still there. Those have to be resolved. They have to be remedied. And we have to understand that. Now, certainly pray, and that'll come up here later as we get into this sermon. The Bible gives many examples of people who suffered depression. And we're going to look at a few of those here today. Job was one. You probably wouldn't all recognize that right away. Moses, by the way, was another one. Elijah, Solomon, Jonah, Jeremiah, and on and on. There were times in their life when they suffered what we call depression. Now, that word is not in the Bible, by the way, but you will see that it is covering a series of things that are what? Negative to the human being and cause great deal of distress and great deal of unhappiness, to say the least. As God's people and Christians, we must understand it and we must know how to deal with it, because everybody at some time or another in their life is going to experience it over some reason or another, whatever it might be. Now, God never meant for us to be always depressed. He knew, obviously, that because of being physical human beings, there would be events in our life that might bring it on. But he has always desired that we understand and that we conquer depression in our lives and not let depression conquer us. It does conquer many people because they do not know what it is and they do not know how to deal with it. And we'll talk about that later, because a lot of times in the medical world, I'll get ahead of myself, they deal with it by simply looking at the physical, the mental, and the emotional. And they do not treat the most important part, because they don't believe in it, the spiritual. And without that, it's going to be a very, very difficult road for people to pull out of things. Now, that is interesting listening there about in the sermonette. I forgot his name. Actor, I've seen his movies. Yeah. He obviously, with the help and the encouragement of others, because he listened and he responded to whatever it was they said or whatever it was they did that he noticed in his life, he responded to it. And a lot of times people will not respond to it. I'll come to that a little bit later. But let me, first of all, I'd like to read just a little bit about depression. I'm not going to spend a lot of time as the introduction on it, but How to Win Over Depression by Tim LaHaye. This is a reprinted book that he did many, many years ago, and I found it very difficult in any way to disagree with. But how far back does man go in studying depression? He writes here that the first writer on record to categorically describe depression was Hippocrates, the Greek physician and philosopher, and his ingenious classification of the four temperaments of human beings, he labeled one melancholy, proposing the erroneous explanation that it was caused by black, heavy blood passing through the patient's veins. Well, I don't think any of us would believe that's causing depression today. A physician named Aretas in the second century described the depressed as, quote, sad and dismayed. He suggested that they became thin, agitated, and sleepless. By the way, conditions which certainly can are obvious of people that may be suffering depression, if the condition were allowed to persist, they complained of 1,000 futilities and desired to die. Then we have in the second century, Plutarch, the Roman, created a distinctly religious context for a person with melancholy. Quote, he looks on himself as a man whom the gods hate and pursue with their anger. A far worse lot is before him. He dares not employ any means of averting or of remedying the evil, lest he be found fighting against the gods. The physician, the consoling friend, are driven away. Leave me, says the wretched man, me, the impious, the accursed, hated of the gods, to suffer my punishment. He sits out of doors, wrapped in sackcloth or in filthy rags. Ever and anon, he rolls himself naked in the dirt, confessing about this and that sin. He has eaten or drunken something wrong. He has gone some way or other which the divine being did not approve of. The festivals in honor of the gods give no pleasure to him, but fill him rather with fear or a fright. Well, ignorance too. And very similar to what Job's friends were trying to put on him. You probably recognize that right away. And speaking of Job, we might just go over there and take a look real quickly at Job chapter 7. Here is a man that clearly, we've gone through the book of Job, and I don't know if I've ever looked at it from the point of view of, well, I have obviously mentioned that he was a very, very down individual. Wouldn't anyone be when you realize what happened to him? It was not something that, you know, you lose your everything you have, and even your wife is on your case, and you've lost your children and everything. That would, I would think, cause somebody to go into a state of depression, to say the least. Well, in chapter 7 of Job, verse 3, so I have been allotted months of futility, and worrisome nights have been appointed to me. I can't sleep at night. This is so much on my mind. And when I lie down, I say, when shall I arise and the night be ended? For I have had my fill of tossing till dawn. My flesh is caked with worms and dust. My skin is cracked and breaks out afresh. Verse 6, my days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle and are spent without hope. You know, people in depression do look at things. My life at this point is without hope. I don't see hope. I don't see answers. I don't see how I'm going to get out of this state. Verse 7, oh, remember that my life is breath. My eye will never again see good. And people believe that. But is that the truth? Is anything impossible with God? Yes, as we know the end of the story, his eye would see good again. And there is hope, and that hope was, of course, through God. The eye of him, verse 8, who sees me will see me no more. While your eyes are upon me, I shall no longer be. As the cloud disappears and vanishes away, so he who goes down to the grave does not come up. And he shall never return to his house, nor shall his place know him any more. Now look at verse 11. And therefore I will not restrain my mouth. I will speak in the anguish of my spirit, and I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. You might recall, if you've read and gone through the book of Job, how many times, you know, why is God doing this to me? And it was God's fault, right? And it was not until you get to, chapter 38 before God then said to Job, where were you when I made all of these things? Well, I think all of us can understand in Job's situation, but some of this, and people who do get into deeply depressed over issues in their life, and certainly he had them in his, sometimes then it turns into anger and lashing out. And we can see where at times He was blaming God, as you read through the book, and angry with God. But God was very merciful. And he did not just answer Job right away. He wanted, I would have, what is it, chapter 25, 6 in there? I would ask God, I would demand of God to explain why this, you know, and on and on. There is a depressed man and who is trying to cope with depression by the anger that he is expressing and letting out. Let's move on here. We can see, and the reason I wanted to go at this time to Job is because when I started reading from this book about some of the Greek and Roman philosophers and physicians, as they called themselves, they were hundreds of years after Job. And many of the things that, when you talk about this subject, the Bible is the greatest textbook on how to assess what depression is and what to do about it. And what's interesting, this is the oldest book in the Bible, is the book of Job. And the point there is, God began to work with man and give the answers that man would need, going back as far as, well, even before the Exodus. And I'm sure back further than that, but I mean as far as recorded before the Exodus here with the book of Job. Apparently it was written somewhere, well, I said before the Exodus, I think tradition says it was written while they were in the wilderness. That tradition that Moses actually wrote the book during the 40 years. But it happened at some time, not too far before they got into the wilderness, possibly even before the Exodus. All right, now let's go forward here a little bit on this and take a look at some of the physical and emotional symptoms of depression, which, by the way, Job just described them in those seven verses or so I read. The first one is looking at the physical reactions, and realize some of these reactions doesn't mean if you are having some of that you're under deep depression. I mean, these are some of the reasons or some of the outward signs of depression, but they can also be outward signs of something else. And so keep that in mind too. Physical reactions that you see, erratic sleep behavior, and he mentioned it right there in verse 3. Erratic sleep behavior. Can't sleep. Awake in the early hours and cannot go back to sleep at all. Well, I sometimes wake up, my wife and I do, and I don't think we're depressed in the early hours. I'll say this, that when we were going through many things in the church back in the 90s, we weren't sleeping very much at night. Because things were really on our mind and very disturbing at the time. That was different than what we may have here at this time. I set the alarm to get up at 5 here to get ready to come over here, and I'm awake at 3 and can't go back to sleep. Well, I have to get up at 3 to go to the airport when we took our trip to Canada and all that. And it seems like my body never does get readjusted. Let me move on here, though. Erratic sleep behavior, that can certainly be a problem, just can't sleep. Apathy, lethargic. I feel tired all the time, unmotivated, I don't want to do anything, just leave me alone. That can be certainly a sign of some degree of depression. Loss of appetite. Food seems tasteless. One loses weight. Had an individual here recently tell me that the doctor said, well, you know, you have too much stress, you're losing weight. The individual had lost quite a bit of weight. Stress sometimes gets mixed in with depression. In this particular case, no, it was not stress. I mean, it's calling depression stress. I don't know if they're really synonyms or not, but what it really is, it's like fellows coming back from Afghanistan, and they have post-traumatic stress. It's post-traumatic depression, is what it really is. And they don't commit suicide because of post-traumatic stress. It's because of post-traumatic depression. And we'll go on here a little bit more on that. All right, apathy, loss of appetite, loss of sexual drive, men lose interest, women may upset their normal cycle. That type of thing may happen. Unkempt appearance. A person will dress sloppily when neatness is called for, And it's something you see them, it says something about maybe their mental, emotional state when they are, and they didn't always used to be that way. But now they're just dressing very sloppily, they're uncaring, they don't take care of things, they don't put things away, they, that type of thinking. And finally, a sixth part of some of the physical things are physical ailments, because depression certainly can bring upon an individual physical ailments. Tiredness, weakness, aching, dizziness, heart palpitations, tightening of the chest, trouble with breathing, headaches, constipation, heartburn, sweating. Now, I know every one of those things can be also caused by something else, too. But usually what you see when people have, there's more than one of these six points that they assigns, I'll put it that way. Let me just quickly say it again here without, they were erratic sleep behavior, apathy, lethargic, loss of appetite, loss of sexual drive, unkempt appearance, and physical ailments. And usually there will be more than just one. And if it's just one, well, you're not sure unless you've been around the individual and you see other factors. Some of the emotional factors that I want to cover right now begin to blend in with the physical. Loss of affection is one of the emotional things that happens when you see people, they withdraw from others. And they must, we must draw close to others rather than drawing away. One of the ways of overcoming is drawing near. I've said this over the years at times when people are going through troubles in their life and they stop attending church. That's when you need to be attending church. And they're withdrawing. I don't want to be there. I don't feel like talking with people. I don't feel like fellowshipping. I don't feel like, in other words, I, right? First person pronoun I, we keep hearing and seeing. You'll see this a little bit later when I get to Solomon. And loss of affection, where is it was there before? We need involvement with people. That one of the things, too, I might just add, coming to my mind as I'm talking here, as I've said to, over in the past, I recall, you come to services, whether you feel like good about it or not, and you start talking with people. You may not hear something in the sermon. Maybe you will. Maybe in the sermonette. Maybe in talking to somebody before or after, and it's going to put a thought in your mind. It's going to be something that will help you, that you pick up. And whoever you heard it from will probably never know. Now, here, George Clooney, he picked things up, and those people couldn't figure out, what's this all about? At the time, they had no idea that they actually said something that moved him to act in a positive way and to come out of the depression that he was in. How about another emotion? Sadness, lack of joy, gloom, no smile. sadness certainly is always sad. Weeping, crying, involuntary tendency to cry. Hostility, we saw that also in verse 11 there in Job 7. Anger against others, and then later anger against oneself. And those are, you know, things can just get worse and worse. And another one here going on, irritability against those who are feeling good or energetic, against routine noises, sometimes music. Now, some young kid pulls up to me at the traffic light and has his window down and is doing some rap thing on there, at this, you know, to for the whole county to hear. That can be irritating. But I'm not depressed. I guess I would be if I had to live with that all the time. But seriously, though, yes, some things, noises can be, people react very quickly to noises that maybe the rest in the family would not. They are quickly, they are very reactionary, maybe are angry to it. When they're irritable, they almost like they resent seeing others who are feeling good around them and all of that. you don't know what I'm going through. How can you be so feel so good and all of that? Anxiety, fear, and worry is another emotional problem. Fear to be left alone. Strong apprehension of death. Those things really, those are beyond you know, worrying about whether I get everything done for the day that I had planned to do. But anxiety, fear, and worry certainly becomes a part of those who are suffering depression. Finally, the seventh one of under emotional problems that are apparent is hopelessness. Hopelessness. I'd like to read just a little bit here from Tim LaHaye's book. And I was not in agreement with Tim LaHaye when it came to his writing, all of being involved in the Rapture ones, what we call it, Left Behind series. Maybe some of you saw that. But he was a counselor of people with emotions, and he really had some very good sound things that he had to say, and that's why I'm using him. But under hopelessness, most depressed people are overcome by a sense of hopelessness. They feel trapped by the circumstances that brought on the depression and can envision no way out. Their past is filled with rejection and grief. Their present becomes anguished, personified, and their gloomy outlook on the future contemplates no solution. And I certainly have run into that many times. Unless someone can inject hope, and that must be what the friends of George Clooney did, unless someone can inject hope into their thinking apparatus, the depression will gradually deepen. Typical in the counseling room is the lament. I am totally discouraged and no hope is in sight. And he says, that is not true. There is hope. And that is absolutely true. But sometimes convincing people that are in a state of depression that there is hope, that's sometimes hard to do. And in their resistance and fighting back and forth, it's almost like, don't try to tell me there is hope. I know there isn't hope. There is hope. There always is hope. A couple more things I want to cover on this. What are some of the depression's causes? I've just given you some of the physical signs, some of the emotional signs. But what are some of the causes that brings on what we call depression? Well, a major disappointment or disappointments certainly can bring on depression, depending on what they are, how they impact your life. Sin leads into depression, depending on just the gravity of the type of sin and the guilt and not being able to deal with it, certainly can bring a person into depression. Ambivalence, feeling trapped, unable to remedy an intolerable situation that you're in life. become very depressed. In marriages, I've seen this too. Wives become very depressed. They feel like they're trapped. They cannot get out of this situation. I don't know what to do about it. It just becomes to them very intolerable. And it certainly can be a cause of depression. Hyper mental activity. Too busy, too long. Never time to rest and think. Give your mind a break. People like this, maybe it's because they are depressed already a little bit that they continue to be so hyper mentally active, simply trying to cover it up or trying to put it out of your mind by just filling your mind and being so active. But there comes a point when you do sit down and when it comes back. Maybe it's at night when you want to go to bed. And yes, hyper mental activity can definitely be a cause of it. Can be a reaction to it as well. Rejection. A lot of times we see this when, the wife is stood up at the altar, the bride was stood up at the altar, total rejection. It can go in a lot of ways. People do some crazy things, don't they, if they have been rejected or feel they have been rejected. And that can certainly be a cause of depression. Sickness can be a cause of depression. Lingering, ongoing sickness. Now, watching on Fox News here with the death of Charles Krauthammer, I thought was quite interesting about his life. From a diving accident, he became quadriplegic. And yet, I, of course, had this sermon in mind, and watching this here the last couple nights that they've been running the things about him and his life, I have to say it was quite remarkable the way that he handled his life and what he did with that. He could have just simply given up in a state of depression. You know, when you're just paralyzed from the neck down and all you can do is move a couple hands. But he became a very productive individual, went on to win the Pulitzer Prize in writing with the Washington Post. And I always enjoyed when I watching the news in the evening when this, he's been off the air for about a year because of his surgeries and everything. But always, when Charles Krauthammer was speaking on the panel and the news on the 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock news on Fox, wait a minute, wait till you, I want to hear this. Well, she did too, because he made such great sense so much of the time. But he did something with his life. He did not let what otherwise would have been total depression overwhelm him. He overwhelmed it. And so it's quite interesting listening to his life a little bit. Sickness, another one is biological malfunction. That can also be something that causes depression to come on. And finally, one other one is inadequate goals in life. Inadequate goals in life. Again, I'd like to just read a comment here from LaHaye. And goals are very important. We are not animals. We are human beings. We are goal and have to be goal-oriented. We've been created that way. Let me see here. Wait a minute, wrong page. Go back here. Human beings are clearly goal-driven creatures. Without goals, we cease to struggle. That is the way our minds, and by the way, before I go on, people, if they will look at the problem they're facing that's causing them to become what we call depressed, decide to turn this into a challenge. That's exactly what Charles Krauthammer did. He turned his predicament into a challenge. And that's what one has to do to really, truly grow and overcome. Now, that is the way our minds were created, goal-oriented. But whenever we let a project become our primary goal, we inevitably experience a letdown after its attainment. For that reason, we need to maintain long-range as well as short-range goals, frequently reassessing and modifying them. Extremely goal-conscious people are rarely depressed. Prior to finishing one project, they originate three others. And we could all learn a lesson from them. Neither indulge a mental vacuum. Instead, cultivate the art of setting goals. And I thought the last short sentence is, never indulge a mental vacuum. Our minds have to be growing. Our minds have to be growing with something of substance in the way of goals. Instead, cultivate the art of setting goals. I could not disagree with that at all. All right, let me get back here to going on them. Now, a number of different factors may have started it. I listed about eight of them here, what causes of depression. But none of these are what continues to drive it and cause it to grow in us. None of those things are what drives it. Let's take a look here at Numbers 11, Moses. Numbers 11. Let's see what begins to drive depression once it has set in. In Numbers 11, in verses starting in verse 10, then Moses heard the people weeping throughout their families, everyone at the door of his tent, and the anger of the Lord was greatly aroused, and Moses also was displeased. So verse 11, Moses said to the Lord, "Why have you afflicted your servant? Why have you done this to me? And why have I not found favor in your sight, that you have laid the burden of all these people on me?" you put this all on me. Verse 12, did I conceive all these people? Did I beget them that you should say to me, carry them in your bosom as a guardian carries a nursing child to the land which you swore to their fathers? Where am I to get meat to give to all these people? For they weep all over me, saying, give us meat that we may eat. I am not able to bear all these people alone, because the burden is too heavy for me. If you treat me like this, Lord, please kill me here and now. If I have found favor in your sight, and do not let me see my wretchedness. Now, what's wrong here with Moses? You've always heard of Moses. He had an anger problem, right? At times, he had other problems too, just like all of us. And here we see that in looking at, well, let's see, I want to read one more verse before you go on further. Verse 23, as you drop down. And the Lord said to Moses, has the Lord's arm been shortened now that you shall see whether what I will happen, what I say will happen to you or not? Look, you think I can't handle this situation is what he's telling Moses at this time? Well, of course he can. The real problem, once it begins to set in and those feelings set in, gets into then self-pity and feeling sorry for self. One becomes very self-centered. Those who suffer with it do not want to face it, or do they want to admit it in many cases. A good example of that is over here in 1 Kings. Let's take a look at this. 1 Kings chapter 19, the story of Elijah. These people are going to have great positions in the kingdom of God. And yet they had these problems and difficulties. And we all do, but it's what we do with it, or do about it, I should say. 1 Kings chapter 19. And we do have to grow and educate ourselves about it. And the greatest education about it, by the way, is right here that you have on your laps, the Bible. 1 Kings 19, verses 1 through 4. Ahab, who was king of northern kingdom of Israel, told his wife Jezebel all that Elijah had done, also how he had executed all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, so let the gods do to me and more also if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time. How did he react? And when he saw that, he arose and he ran for his life and went to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. Beersheba's on the edge of the desert of the Sinai. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness, and he came and sat down under a broom tree, and he prayed that he might die, and said, it's enough. Now, Lord, take my life, for I am no better than my father's. Here we see self-pity once again, feeling sorry for himself. I mean, God couldn't protect him up at Carmel where he came from, and this threat was made and all of that. No, if God if Elijah could pour water on the altar at Carmel, you remember the story? And then after the priests of Baal and everything had spent all morning and got nowhere, he pours water over everything and prays, and God brings fire down and just ignites everything. So Ahab tells his wife Jezebel what happened down there at Carmel, and she's mad. She's going to, we'll take 450 priests of Baal were killed that day. And he asked the people, who will you obey? I mean, who are you going to follow, Baal or God, right? And all of that. And then the next day, he's on the run. And he's down there in the desert south of Beersheba. He says he walked out some distance to that broom tree and said, just take my life. Well, wait a minute, Elijah. Didn't he just put that thing, you poured all that water up there. Can't he take care of this problem? And you begin to see here that people can get down and, in this case, lack faith and become very depressed and feeling with self-pity. As you see in both of the cases here, we always tend to blame something or someone else when depression sets in. We don't want to take personal responsibility, both Moses and Elijah. There are four parts to the human mind that need to be considered in dealing with depression, which I mentioned ahead of time earlier. The physical, the mental, the emotional, and the spiritual, of which the latter is the most important. And for the vast, vast majority, it is actually, you won't find, it's very scarce when you find people that can overcome deep depression by just simply taking some drug, some therapy like that, addressing only maybe physical, mental, or emotional, but not the spiritual. The spiritual is so very, very important. And let me, one last one here I want to read from him, on at least on this point, Andy. And the total person. The form of therapy most commonly neglected by secular doctors, psychiatrists, and counselors today is spiritual therapy. Because our educational system is overwhelmingly secularized and based on atheistic humanism, little or no consideration is given to the highly significant spiritual side of our nature. The secular view of people as body, mind, and emotions is completely inadequate. And we will never solve the problems of humanity on a permanent basis until we recognize that void. We are intensely spiritual beings, which distinguishes us from the animal kingdom. Unless therapy includes a remedy for our spiritual nature, it will offer only minimal or temporary results that will come or be that we could look at. I thought it was very interesting. I'll just paraphrase a couple of the things that he brought out here on this one point. Well, I can even read it. In my travels around the world, I have made a special effort to examine the archaeological ruins of ancient civilizations. Before long, I began to recognize that the oldest buildings were temples, shrines, or houses of religious worship, indicating a universal religious hunger. What produces that hunger? It is the natural, God-given spiritual instinct or nature that we have, that animals do not have and cannot, of course, have. Even atheists, sometimes on the deathbed, will seek or want to cry out, is there a God? Where is he? And so on. The latter of the mind, the emotions, the mind, and, what did I say, the physical, the emotional, the mind, and fourth, the spiritual, is absolutely essential, especially in growing and overcoming whatever it might be when it comes to emotions. I brought along an article that I wanted to share a little bit. It was written in 1956, Herbert W. Armstrong. There's a hidden enemy in your home. An excellent article, and sometimes I go back to this. The reason I like this article, and we've written others over the years on this subject and so on, but I like this because he was so personal. But I want to just read, first of all, what he has to say before he gets into the personal part, and I'll share with you. All human beings are actuated by their emotions. But do we ever stop to ask, analyze, what are these emotions? An emotion is a strong feeling, a disturbance, a departure from the normal, calm state of rational thinking and acting. An impulse toward an action which has not been reasoned and approved by the mind. Among the emotions are such feelings or impulses as fear, anger, disgust, grief, joy, surprise, yearning. And first cousin to emotion is our moods. An emotionally immature person is usually one who is moody and has never learned to control his moods. Skipping down here in the article, then he gets in to his own personal experience. I remember the first funeral I was called on to officiate. At funerals, many people let their emotions of grief run uncontrolled. A great fear seized me I was afraid that I would not be able to keep calm and control my own feelings, and I knew I must do that, and with calm tenderness and sympathy, comfort the bereaved. I was much younger then, and in the emotional struggle that went on inside my mind over ability to carry this responsibility, I began to break down, and and to go to pieces. I announced to my family I just couldn't do it. We were at the time visiting in my father's home, and he came over to me, put his hands on my shoulders, and calmly shook me, saying in a voice of authority with which he had not spoken to me since I was a child, "Here, snap out of it. This is your responsibility. The family is broken up in sorrow, and they are relying on you. You can't back out of it. Wake up. Come to yourself. Get a grip on yourself. You're going through this. You're going to go through this, and you're going to do it with credit, calm, dignity, and sincerity." That, I remember, sobered and calmed me and brought me back to my right senses, and I replied quietly, "Yes, Dad, of course I will." Quite interesting. Well, then here he mentions a few other things I'll just end up with. "I found it difficult as I was later more and more frequently called upon to officiate at funerals. So to control my own emotions as to achieve right balance, that outer calmness without going to the opposite extreme of hardening my senses so that I would not feel proper sympathy." And here's the final sentence that I want to read, which I think sums everything up. "It was through God's help and much prayer that I was able to achieve emotional control." And I wanted to read up to that point because that is the answer, and it is the spiritual part of our mind. Now, it isn't just one prayer. It's going to take time. And God leads and guides. What is it there in the Psalm 23? He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. That takes time. And we have to do our part by prayer and drawing close to him every day. And yes, he will lead us in the paths of righteousness to overcome the evil depression. The depression is not joyous. It's not righteous. It's not what we want. So it's evil. And but he will lead us in the paths of righteousness. Now, what can we do about depression? A few things here that I'd like to end on that we can do. First of all, we must educate ourselves about it. This is not the only book I have that covers this. I pick up some books when I'm in airports a lot of times, or at supermarkets when they have the Christian turnstile thing, you know, it's all kind of sitting over there by itself. I'll look and see what they got, and some of them are really quite good. A lot of the particular writers are not only ministers, but they're also people who are psychologists and counselors, and it is biblically based. That's why I consider it good. I wouldn't agree with them on church doctrine, but when it comes to something like this, but it is biblically based, it's sound, as I think you can see when I've been reading. Educate yourself. Do not just sit around and do nothing. Anything that you read, you have to be careful, of course, with it. Does it agree with Scripture, or does it leave God out of the picture? Secular psychology, unfortunately, too much, leaves God completely out. Now, there's what they call Christian psychologists, and of course, they are people who do believe in God, in Christ, in the Bible, and they use it, and which can be very, I believe, constructive to an individual. Notice over here in Hosea chapter 4, the prophet Hosea. Get to it. In chapter 4, of Hosea and verse 6. And he says, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I will also reject you from being priest for me. Because you have forgotten the law of your God, I also will forget your children." But the first part of that, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. God gave us the ability to read. He gave us language, written language. We do need to read. Sometimes people, they haven't read a book or read anything since they left high school. We need to read. We need to make time. And we need to find things that are really constructive and good that help us. Reading helps us to grow. It helps our mind to expand in the right sense of looking and then comparing what we're reading with what the scriptures say, what God has said. And so we grow in knowledge. And as we do, it helps us. We begin to learn. That's one aspect here that we certainly can do. The Bible, when it comes to reading, the Bible has the best remedy, as I've said before, and help when it comes to this subject. It really does. Another point here on what do we do with it? You have to take charge of yourself. Take charge of yourself. You cannot let whatever is troubling you take charge of you. And if it does, well, then it's going to be a while before things ever change. And things might even get worse if you're not taking charge of yourself. When you say take charge of yourself, what do you mean? Well, first of all, you have to accept full 100% responsibility for your depression. It's not somebody else's fault. It's your fault. And you have allowed it. Your mind has, kind of like in a vacuum at some stage or point or time. It wasn't really growing with good goals and things. By the way, reading does help give you some really interesting things to think about, challenging things in your mind, and because you're growing. But we have to realize in accepting responsibility, we are doing it to ourselves. Nobody's doing it to us. Me, myself, and I is doing it to me, myself, and I. And that's important that we come to understand that. We have to confess to God in prayer our self-pity, our self-centeredness that we have been in. People don't like to do that. And sometimes people get angry if you sit down and try to gently explain and talk to them about some of these things, help them so they can begin to see, look, turn it around. And they just get angry because they know it's true, but they don't want to accept it at that point. In the book of Proverbs over here, chapter 23, is a very interesting short little scripture, Proverbs 23 and in verse 7. And this is a great aid in fighting and taking charge and overcoming. Understand this, pray about this. Chapter 23, verse 7, for as he thinks or she thinks in his heart, so is he. As we think in our heart and mind, if you're thinking negative, you're thinking awful things, guess what? You're going to feel awful. And moods and emotions are the result of thoughts. And when we begin to resolve whatever it is, if it's fear, all right, is this fear really real? I mean, let's think it through. God doesn't want us to have a spirit of fear. And you read that in 1 John chapter 4, and what is it, verse 18. But we have to go to God. When we take charge of ourselves, we need to go on our knees and confess our sins, confess all of these self-pity, self-centered thinkings that we've had over whatever the issue is. It can be varied, as you can tell by what we've already talked about leading up to this point. But 1 John 1, verse 9, if any have sinned, we can confess our sins to him, and he's faithful and right to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. 1 John 1, 9. That was written to baptized members at the end of the first century. And it applies to all of us at all time. Another thing, when taking charge of yourself, ask yourself this question. Well, how long do I want to be like this? How long do I want to be like this? Oh, I just love to be so miserable. I think I'll just stay this way for another 6 months, year. It's so fun to be miserable. Well, obviously not. But, you know, we do have to stop. We don't ask, and this has been my observation. You have to stop and ask that question to yourself. How long do I want to be like this? How long does God want me to be like this? Then we begin to see, we're starting to take charge when we face the issue and ask the questions. Because once we accept the responsibility, I mean, that's 50% of the battle. And then we can use these other tools here, and we will grow. In taking charge of ourselves, we also have to act with determination to win. Determination to win. I certainly could, I won't do it, but I could have turned over to Joshua chapter 1, verses 5 through 9. Three times Joshua was commanded to be strong and of good courage. And the final time in verse 9, have I not told you to be strong and of good courage? Don't be afraid or be dismayed. I am with you wherever you go. Now, didn't Jesus say that to us? Matthew 28, 20. I am with you to the end of the age. I won't leave you. I won't leave you. And we need to take that to the bank, as they say, and absolutely believe and understand that's true. God cannot lie. So, yes, we have to act with determination. We must turn a negative thought or feelings into a positive challenge. That's taking charge of ourselves. I feel bad today. Well, I must take charge of our feelings and determine that I will change how I feel today. You know, you've heard that people get up. Well, he got up on the wrong side of the bed. He got up feeling bad. What? Mentally, emotionally bad in his mind. What's he doing about it? No, he's been causing a lot of trouble here around the house with all the rest of us. Now, if you find yourself in that situation, all right, stop. You may need to go and get on your knees and ask God, help me. I know this is not right. I want to do. What would Jesus Christ do? How would he get out of bed? What would his thoughts be? I want to be that way. I want righteousness and to change this and begin to talk and think and even go to the Bible and read about it. It can change everything and turn a bad day into a great day when we do that. All right, moving on from taking charge of ourselves. We must have daily, effective, and fervent prayer. A lot of times people who are in depression, they don't pray. They don't read the Bible. Or if it is, it's just looking at words. No, what do they mean? And how does that apply to me as well as to others? We have to have contact with God every day. I've had people at times say, well, I pray all the time. What are you praying about? Stop and ask, because James said we can pray amiss. And no, are we giving God thanks? Are we giving God praise? What is it, Psalm 48:1? Great is the Lord and greatly to be praised. It should be a part of our prayer to begin with. Thanking God, many, many things. I thank you for what I'm going through. I thank you because it is for my good, and it will be. I will be better for it in the end. A lot of times people, you know, Job, he wanted to question and blame God for it. We can't do that. Part of our taking charge of ourselves and part of our prayers is, yes, we thank God, not that we're not going to stay this way. We're not going to let ourselves stay this way. But I thank you for showing me this weakness I've had and that I can, through Jesus Christ, overcome this. Pray for the needs and the problems that others are facing. Very important. Pray for the needs and things that other people are facing. A very, very important thing indeed. in Proverbs 24, if you're there, I was, but now I turned back, so I'll go back again to Proverbs. In Proverbs 24, and this is very important in overcoming. Very important in overcoming. And overcoming, because some people, they relapse. We all do. But we can't give up. We come back and fight again. And right here in Proverbs 24 and verse 16, for a righteous man may fall seven times and rise again. He gets up. every time you come back, you come back, you never give up, I think was in the sermonette. You never give up and quit. And don't get discouraged and down and thinking, well, I can't. Well, with God's help, in time, you will. You will succeed. And listen to and act on guidance when it comes, when you receive it in some form, manner, or way. Don't resist it. Take every little piece, you know, like I like to kind of joke about playing golf, and I haven't played in quite a while, but when I do, I'll use the expression around somebody I'm playing with, I'll take all the help I can get. And it is a game that is very challenging. I enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. But there's a lot, I try to pick out a lot of things from the physical to apply spiritually. And applies in life. I'll take all the help I can get in living this spiritual life. I'm not going to say, no, I don't need any more of that help. Who's going to say that? Well, sometimes people, when they're down and discouraged, they may not outwardly say it, but they're in their mind, they're kind of that way, and they turn and they walk away, and they're saying, I don't need that. But they didn't say it to the person. They just kept it to themselves. Don't do that. You want to, in every way, listen and learn from every possible thing that you can, and we all need all the help we can get. Another point, number four here, beware of the enemies of your mind that will try to sidetrack and discourage you. Number one, stubbornness. Many people resist help, as I've been talking about here already, when it is offered. They are not ready to divorce themselves of destructive thinking. They may say, well, you don't know what you're talking about. Or you don't understand my situation background. You haven't had to walk in my shoes. And you're right. I haven't. And others may have not. Some have and some have not. But you know, when I hear that kind of language and I've had that said to me, many times the real message is, I'm not ready to let go yet. And the person should stop and think about that. Rather than trying to say, because I haven't faced what you're presently facing, which is true, I haven't in most cases, but are you telling me, really, I'm not ready to let go of this yet? That's why I'm telling you, you don't know what you're talking about. Well, you know, I think there are some things that we can help one another with. I don't have to be a doctor in psychology or whatever to be able to recognize. I know the Bible pretty well. Not that I know it all, but I do, after 50 whatever years it's been, I understand quite a few things. Things I've had to go through in my personal life and going through the scriptures. There is an incredible number of great helping scriptures there for these kind of problems that you may face in life. Stubbornness is one of the things that can sidetrack you. Fear is another one. I mentioned it earlier. And doubt. Fear, of course, God doesn't want us to be afraid and fearful. He wants us to realize that he is with us and that we don't have to have all of these fears. You know, people have, I've spoken on that before, and I don't have it in these notes here, but there are all kinds of fears that people experience and go, and it's real to them. And they are so emotionally into those fears that they don't stop to really, wait a minute, step back. Let's think about this. Is this really an actual fear that you have to be afraid of? In most cases, it isn't. It isn't. But people are afraid of things like that, and they're afraid of death. And well, there's a lot of different types of fears that people might have. And guess what its ally is? It's a buddy that goes along with it. It's doubt. Fear and doubt go together. If we find ourselves wavering in anything, can we dispel doubt? We don't just put it out. We face the doubt. What is it? Is it true? And can we prove one way or the other? Either it's true or it's not true, right? And well, let's search out and find out. If we don't think that is that doubt is right, well, then let's search out and get reasons and build. It says prove all things, right? prove that doubt wrong. A lot of times people just, they don't know what to do. It's like they're caught and I don't know where to go, where to turn. Well, there are answers, folks, and I don't want to take any more time here, but all of these things, if we face them, we can. It doesn't have to be a depressing subject. It can be very encouraging when we begin to understand what it is. And God gives us a number of scriptures here throughout the Bible. In fact, the whole Bible is filled with antidotes and things on how to handle depression. I have a list, and I've failed to bring it with me. I have a list of the scriptures I'm talking about, and it's not totally complete, but it is a long list. From Moses all the way to the end of the New Testament, of the, I'll call them, anti-depression scriptures, antidotes of what to do, and which I've given to some of you at times and to others as well, and I keep adding to it. There are so many. Dennis here gave a split sermon on Philippians chapter 4, verses 4 through 8. That is an anti-depression set of scriptures. Paul said in Philippians also, chapter 3, verse 13 through 15, that which is behind, I leave behind. I don't take it with me. On and on. These are fantastic things that to grasp onto and to apply in our life with whatever we're going through. 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7. We haven't been given the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Meditate on that. Pray about that. And there is power there in God's spirit. We can go on and on, can't we? But there are many, many scriptures that help, frankly, than any secular psychology book you will find. The greatest book on how to overcome depression and how to have a joyous mind is this book. This book. There is nothing like it. We have to use it. We have to look for it and pray every day for God's guidance and direction and leading us in a positive way. Well, of all of God, all that God has created on earth, we alone have emotions. If you have pets, your dog doesn't have emotions. Your cat, oh, they just love to be petted and all of that. But we have real emotions. Brethren, let's enjoy our positive emotions and let's learn how to overcome our negative emotions.